2 weeks ago, we looked at Deuteronomy 18:15 through 19. Had to do with the prophet that Moses was, it wasn't revealed to him, but it was conveyed to him through God. Adonai will raise up for you a prophet like me from among yourselves, from your own kinsmen. You are to pay attention to him. Just as when you were assembled at Horeb and requested Adonai your God, don't let me hear the voice of Adonai my God anymore, or let me see this great fire ever again. If I do, I will die. On that occasion, Adonai said to me, to Moses, they are right in what they are saying. I will raise up for them a prophet like you from among their kinsmen. I will put my words in his mouth, and he will tell them everything I order him. Whoever doesn't listen to my words, which he will speak in my name, will have to account for himself to me. So last time, 2 weeks ago, I shared with you the expectation of the people for the appearance of the prophet from John 1:21. Yochanan the Immerser, he was asked, are you Elijah? No, I'm not. Are you the prophet? He said, no, the one you are expecting will be the prophet. And the people would speculate that Yeshua was the prophet after feeding 5,000 in John 6:13 and 14. They gathered them and filled 12 baskets of the pieces from the 5 barley loaves left by those who had eaten. When the people saw the miracle he had performed, they said, this has to be the prophet who is supposed to come into the world. And then on Hoshana Rabbah, the last great day of Sukkot, which we're going to experience in a couple weeks, John chapter 7 and verse 40, on hearing his words, some people in the crowd said, surely this man is the prophet. Others said, this is the Messiah. But others said, how can the Messiah come from the Galilee? In answer to their question, they're all right, yes, he is the prophet, he is the Messiah, and he did come from Galilee. I'm restating or reiterating all this to you as a starting point, so none of this should be new for you. Unless you're here for the first time, then it is new for you. And I'm wanting to refresh your memories from 2 weeks ago about the prophet in relation to Moses and in relation to Yeshua. I want to provide some additional information that further amplifies the connection between Moses and Yeshua. What else connects Yeshua and Moshe that the people were seeking and ultimately found? What were they taught about Moshe that would lead them to make the connection to Yeshua? As we start down this parallel path of Moses and Yeshua, we first start with their early years. Both Moses and Yeshua had parents that were instrumental in protecting their children. Exodus chapter 2 and verse 2. When she conceived and had a son, upon seeing what a fine child he was, she hid him for 3 months. And then Matthew chapter 2, verses 13 and 14. After they had gone, an angel of Adonai appeared to Joseph in a dream and said, get up, take the child and his mother and escape to Egypt, and stay there until I tell you to leave. For Herod is going to look for the child in order to kill him. So he got up, took the child and his mother, and left during the night for Egypt. In each case, they were faithful to Adonai, and in each case they were protecting them from a wicked ruler, each intending to kill the child. Exodus chapter 1, verses 15 and 16. Moreover, the king of Egypt spoke to the Hebrew midwives, one of whom was called Shifra and the other Puah. When you attend the Hebrew women, when you attend the Hebrew women and see them giving birth, he said, if it's a boy, kill him. But if it's a girl, let her live. And Matthew 2:16. Meanwhile, when Herod realized that the Magi had tricked him, he was furious and gave orders to kill all the boys in and around Bethlehem who were 2 years old or less, calculating from the time the Magi had told him. One was part of a plot to eliminate the male children because the Jewish people were growing in number greater than that of the Egyptians. So much so that the mere threat of being outnumbered was cause to eliminate the newly born children. Herod saw another threat, not from being outnumbered, but from prophecy. The threat was to his throne and power. If the Magi were correct, a new king of the Jews was born. He could not have that. And thus, the edict to kill all male children under the age of 2 was enacted. This is the first parallel. Something so obvious, yet so important to reiterate. Both were Jews. Moses, a Jew from the tribe of Levi. Yeshua, a Jew from the tribe of Judah. Exodus 2:1. A man from the family of Levi took a woman and descended from Levi as his wife. These are Moshe's parents. Then Matthew 1, you have the genealogy of Yeshua, who is the son of David, who is the son of Abraham. All the way down to verse 16, Yaakov was the father of Joseph, the husband of Miriam, from whom was born Yeshua, who was called the Messiah. So why do I reiterate something that is so obvious? It may be obvious to us, but it is also obvious to the Muslims, who too believe that the prophet, like Moses, is Muhammad. We know this to be a false claim, simply by Adonai's interaction with Abraham. Don't take my word or my bias for it. Genesis chapter 17, starting in verse 18. Abraham said to God, if only Ishmael could live in your presence. God answered, no. But Sarah, your wife, will bear you a son, and you are to call him Yitzhak. I will establish my covenant with him as an everlasting covenant for his descendants after him. But as for Ishmael, I have heard you. I have blessed him. I will make him fruitful and give him many descendants. He will father 12 princes, and I will make him a great nation. But I will establish my covenant with Yitzhak from Sarah, will bear to you at this time next year. With that, God finished speaking, and Abraham went up from him. There's no question here. Yet you might have competing narratives and say, well, no, the prophet came from Ishmael. No, the prophet came from Isaac. What you have is what God said. I will tend to lean on what God says. So this promise made to Sarah that it would be her seed, her child, is further reiterated by Shaul in Romans 9, starting in verse 6. But the present condition of Israel does not mean that the word of God has failed. For not everyone from Israel is truly part of Israel. Indeed, not all the descendants are seed of Abraham. Rather, what is to be called your seed will be in Yitzhak. In other words, it is not the physical children who are children of God, but the children the promise refers to who are considered seed. For this is what the promise said. At the set time, I will come and Sarah will have a son. Believe it or not, these verses, which speak about Yitzhak versus Ishmael, are verses that are used to support replacement theology. Talking about Israel's present condition. Reiterating the verse, well, everyone from Israel is not truly part of Israel. And in essence, the physical seed versus the spiritual seed. Let me boil it down for you in its simplest form. In terms of how this theology gets presented. The physical children are the Jewish people. The spiritual children are the church. An entirely different application of these verses, for which was never the intent of the author Shaul. What is he trying to convey? He's trying to convey an aspect of promise. That it is through Sarah and the promise that God made to Abraham that it would be their child, not Ishmael. So what else connects Moses and Yeshua? For starters, while other prophets would receive revelation through dreams and visions, Adonai spoke directly to both Moses and Yeshua. Let me give you this Hebrew term, panim lepanim. Face to face. Numbers chapter 12. Face to face meaning directly. Not through dreams and visions. Numbers chapter 12, starting in verse 5. Adonai came down in a column of cloud and stood at the entrance to the tent. He summoned Aaron and Miriam, and they both went forward. He said, listen to what I say, God speaking. When there is a prophet among you, I, Adonai, make myself known to him in a vision. I speak with him in a dream, but it isn't that way with my servant Moses. He is the only one who is faithful in my entire household. With him I speak face to face and clearly, not in riddles. He sees the image of Adonai, so why weren't you afraid to criticize my servant Moshe? Then you have Luke chapter 9, starting in verse 33. As the men were leaving, Yeshua, Cephas said to him, not knowing what he was saying, it's good that we're here, Rabbi. Let's put up three shelters, or three sukkot, one for you, one for Moshe, and one for Eliyahu. As he spoke, a cloud came and enveloped them. They were frightened as they entered the cloud. And a voice came out from the cloud saying, this is my son whom I have chosen. Listen to him. When the voice spoke, Yeshua was alone once more. They kept quiet. At that time, they told no one anything of what they had seen. A clear, audible voice speaking directly to Yeshua, for which Cephas heard. Clear audible voice that spoke to Miriam and Aaron that they heard. Reiterating that they both speak directly to Moshe and Yeshua, that God spoke directly with them. What else connects Moshe and Yeshua? They were both rejected by their people. Moshe's authority is given by Adonai would be constantly challenged by the people. Exodus 32:1. When the people saw that Moshe was taking a long time to come down from the mountain, they gathered around Aaron and said to him, get busy and make us gods, small g, to go ahead of us, because as Moshe, the man that brought us up from the land of Egypt, we don't know what has become of him. Numbers 12:1. Miriam and Aaron began criticizing Moses on account of the Ethiopian woman he had married, for he had in fact married an Ethiopian woman. They said, "Is it true that Adonai has spoken only with Moshe? Hasn't he spoken with us too?" Adonai heard them. Numbers 16:1 and 2. Now Korach, the son of Yitzhar, the son of Kohath, the son of Levi, along with Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, and On, the son of Pelet, descendants of Reuben, took men and rebelled against Moses. Siding with them were 250 men of Israel, leaders of the community, key members of the council, men of reputation. Moses had a lot of contention to deal with. He was the leader of God, yet he was not technically affirmed by the people, so to speak. From his family to the leaders, there was always contention. And when we look at Yeshua, while Yeshua constantly challenged the religious leaders, it would be them who would plot to have Yeshua killed, and by where the people would as a whole reject him. It would be after the resurrection of Eleazar that the Kohanim would devise their plot to kill Yeshua. Yochanan, John chapter 12, starting in verse 9. A large crowd of Judeans learned that he was there, and they came not only because of Yeshua, but also so that they could see Eleazar, who he had raised from the dead. The head Kohanim then decided to do away with Eleazar too, since it was because of him that large numbers of the Judeans were leaving their leaders and putting their trust in Yeshua. If you want to look for a moment when the plot to kill Yeshua began, John chapter 12. And the plot would culminate during the Passover season. Matthew chapter 27, starting in verse 17. Now this is in the midst of one of the trials with Rome. The three trials amongst the Jewish leadership had already concluded. And I believe this was the last trial. Verse 17. So when a crowd had gathered, Pilate said to them, "Whom do you want me to set free for you? Barabbas, or Yeshua, called the Messiah?" For he understood that it was out of jealousy that they had handed him over. While he was sitting in court, his wife sent him a message, "Leave that innocent man alone. Today, in a dream, I suffered terribly because of him." But the head Kohanim persuaded the crowd to ask for Barabbas, for Barabbas' release, and to have Yeshua executed on the stake. He said, "Which of the two do you want to be set free for you?" asked the governor. "Barabbas," they answered. Pilate said to them, "Then what should I do with Yeshua, called the Messiah?" They all said, "Put him to death on the stake. Put him to death on the stake." When he asked why, "What crime has he committed?" they shouted all the louder, "Put him to death on the stake." And ultimately rejected by the people. Both were rejected by the people at various times. What else connects Yeshua and Moshe? Probably the most important thing when you think about it. They were both sent by God. They were sent by God with a purpose. They each had a mission. And their missions are comparable as well. Exodus chapter 3, starting in verse 1. Moses to the people in order to deliver them from the bondage of Egyptian slavery. Now Moses was tending the sheep of Yitro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, leading the flock to the far side of the desert. He came to the mountain of God at Horeb. The angel of Adonai appeared to him in a fire blazing from the middle of the bush. He looked and saw that although the bush was flaming with fire, yet the bush was not being burned up. Moses said, I'm going to go over and see this amazing sight and find out why the bush isn't being burned up. When Adonai saw that he had gone over to see, God called to him from the middle of the bush, Moshe, Moshe. He answered, here I am. He said, don't come any closer. Take your sandals off your feet, because the place where you are standing is holy ground. I am the God of your father, he continued, the God of Abraham, the God of Yitzhak, and the God of Yaakov. Moses covered his face because he was afraid to look at God. Adonai said to him, I have seen how my people are being oppressed in Egypt and heard their cry for release from their slave masters because I know their pain. I have come down to rescue them from the Egyptians and to bring them up out of that country to a good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey. The place of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. Yes, the cry of the people of Israel has come to me, and I have seen how terribly the Egyptians oppressed them. Therefore now come, and I will send you to Pharaoh, so that you can lead my people, the descendants of Israel, out of Egypt. The key verse being verse 10. I will send you. God called Moses to go back to Egypt, a place from which he became exiled. So Moses was to deliver Israel from bondage, from the slavery of the Egyptians. Yeshua's mission, he was sent to deliver not only his people, but also the nations from the bondage of slavery. But a different slavery. That slavery is the slavery of sin. John chapter 8, starting in verse 38. I saw what my father had shown me. You do what your father has told you. They answered him, our father is Abraham. Yeshua replied, if you are the children of Abraham, then do the things Abraham did. We can do a comparison of Abraham and Yeshua. That would be another sermon for another day. As it is, you are out to kill me, a man who has told you the truth, which I heard from God. Abraham did nothing like that. You are doing the things your father does. We're not illegitimate children, they said to him. We have only our father God. Yeshua replied to them, if God were your father, you would love me, because I came out from God, and now I have arrived here. I did not come on my own. He sent me. Then you have John 3:17. For God did not send the Son into the world to judge the world, but rather so that through Him the world might be saved. God sent His Son. So you have this connection between God and Moses. God sent them. He sent them to deliver His people, both from a bondage and a slavery. one from the Egyptians, one from the adversary. So these parallel paths is, in essence, one is foreshadowing the other. So there are many other aspects that connect Moses and Yeshua. Yet the impact I want to leave you with is not just similarities, but that of purpose. Their purpose was that of redemption first, delivering them from oppression and bondage. The provisions Adonai made through this freedom would impact not only the Jewish people, but anyone who came alongside them, residing with them, recognizing the God of Israel, whereby they would shepherd these people in the ways of Adonai. Moses would spend 40 years preparing to shepherd the children of Israel through the shepherding of actual sheep. I've shared with you the 21 characteristics of sheep before. Keeping in mind, we and sheep were pretty close in terms of our characteristics. I reiterate Exodus 3:1. Now Moses was tending the sheep of Yitro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian. Leading the flock to the far side of the desert, he came to the mountain of God, to Horeb. Call it practice. Moses was being prepared even though he didn't know what he was being prepared for. And Yeshua, he is identified as the good shepherd. John 10:11. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for his sheep. One thing that I did not share with you and didn't plan on elaborating on, both of them would have laid down their lives for those that they were shepherding. Moses, what did he do? He said, if you're going to blot them out, then blot me out as well. And we all know what Yeshua did. Two of the traits of a shepherd. He tends his flock. And he rears his flock. What does it mean to tend to them? It means to take care of them, to look after them, to give one's attention to them, and to manage them. Have you eaten yet? Don't go over there, that pasture's not good. Stay here where it's good ground. You've probably heard me say things like that at Messiah Conference. With the group that are there, I don't have to worry about tending my sheep at Messiah Conference because it's good ground everywhere. They might get a little indigestion because of something that they may have heard, but then we go over it to sort of calm them or to help them understand. To rear means to bring up and to care for until they are fully grown. And that they are especially in a particular manner. Meaning that, how about this? When Yeshua left, they weren't still drinking the milk. He got them from the milk to the meat. Moses tended and reared them until they would enter the promised land. Deuteronomy chapter 33 verses 28 and 29. This is towards the end. So Israel lives in security. The fountain of Yaakov is alone in a land of grain and new wine, where the skies drip with dew. Happy are you, Israel, who is like you, a people saved by Adonai, your defender helping you, and your sword of triumph. Your enemies will cringe before you, but you will trample down their high places. This is a promise that basically, or a blessing that Moses instills upon Israel that comes from God. You will live in security. The fountain of Yaakov is alone in the land of grain and new wine. Happy are you, Israel. Who is like you, a people saved by Adonai? all these things. It wasn't Moses, but Moses was his shepherd. It was God. And then Deuteronomy chapter 34, verses 4 through 8. Moses' responsibility, his rearing and his tending of Israel came to an end. He had done everything God had asked of him. Verse 4, Deuteronomy 34. And I said to him, "This is the land concerning which I swore to Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. I will give it to your descendants. I have let you see it with your eyes, but you will not cross over there." So Moses, the servant of Adonai, died there in the land of Moab, as Adonai had said. He was buried in the valley across from Beit Peor in the land of Moab. But to this day, no one knows where his grave is. Moses was 120 years old when he died, with eyes undimmed and vigor undiminished. The people of Israel mourned Moses on the plains of Moab for 30 days. After this, the days of crying and mourning for Moses ended. His time as shepherd had a duration, had a length, and in essence had a culmination. Yeshua would tend and rear them until they were sent forth as his witnesses. Luke chapter 24, starting in verse 44. Yeshua said to them, "This is what I meant when I was still with you and told you that everything written about me in the Torah of Moses, the prophets, and the Psalms had to be fulfilled." Then he opened their minds so that they could understand the Tanakh. And in his name, repentance leading to the forgiveness of sins is to be proclaimed to people from all nations, starting in Jerusalem. "You are my witnesses. Now I am sending forth upon you what my Father promised. So stay here in the city until you have been equipped with power from above." Yeshua did everything to equip them, but he told them, "Wait here, because now God is going to equip you even more." The great shepherd completed his task here on earth. So let there not be any doubt that the prophet, like Moses, is Yeshua. The prophet of Adonai is a messenger for him, a message from Adonai, conveyed by his prophet, in this case, the prophet, being Yeshua, is still speaking. If he's still speaking, what is he saying? This is where we come to the High Holy Days. Over each day, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Sukkot, we are going to look at what the prophet is still saying. On Rosh Hashanah, we're going to talk about promises made. On Yom Kippur, we're going to talk about promises forfeited. And on Sukkot, we're going to talk about promises kept. Call it a series, whatever you want to call it. I just know that I needed to prepare you today for tomorrow and for the days to come, because all of this plays in to God's narrative, to God's plan, to God's purpose. And it all starts with the prophet. Yeshua being that prophet. And in essence, he still has something to say because he still has something to do. So we will talk more about that tomorrow night.